Previously on Those Were the Days.
But if you asked me to hum the theme song, I could immediately do it.
It's kind of like Amelia Bedelia for grown-ups, right?
He had been in the Aleutian Islands for 3 whole weeks.
But watching it with adult eyes, I'm like, oh, okay, I get it.
Yep. So Basenji is a kind of dog.
That was a great gag.
Back in Basenji, which is a kind of dog.
My favorite manifestation of his during that, though, was the Pit of Tigers.
I appreciate you agreeing with me one way or the other, Travis.
And Standards and Practices was having it no more. Finkillium.
That's what it was.
Those Were the Days is filmed before a live internet audience.
Those Were the Days, a shadowy flight into the dangerous world of classic TV. I'm your host, Travis, aka TV's Travis, and I am not a loner. I need help discussing classic television. So with me, I have a crime-fighting badass who drives a talking 1983 Chevy Silverado named Wit, Amy Frost.
Hitchcock was the master of suspense and arguably one of the most influential directors. But only Knight Rider was brave enough to ask, what if Hitchcock had a synthesizer?
Also with me, a man who will only wear shirts with the top 3 buttons undone, Audie Norman.
Michael? Michael? I'm trying to reach you, Michael. Where are you? My scanners can only go so far, Michael.
And a suspicious janitor named Mason Jorhees, or as we call him, Stephen Adams.
Look, I know that some people want costumes made of any kind of hair, but me, I'm a discerning costume enthusiast, and I accept only the best. I have a photo of a sample of a lock of gorilla hair, and if I can't get an exact match, well, I'm taking my business elsewhere.
Look, we need to have standards, okay?
Yeah. The costume industry needs to give me the real stuff or no go.
This is Those Were the Days. We talk classic TV, and if you haven't figured it out by now, we're talking about Knight Rider. Knight Rider was a 1982 television series, ran from 1982 to 1986, a total of 86 episodes on NBC, created by Glenn A. Larson. It is the story of Michael Knight, born Michael Long. He was a detective in... I can't remember who he was a detective for, but during something happening in Las Vegas, he was shot in the face and nearly died. And so self-made billionaire William Knight decided to give him plastic surgery and rename him Michael Knight. And now he works for his private corporation, I guess, called Flag, which stood for, if I remember it correctly, was the Foundation of for Law and Government, Flag. So that's who Michael Knight works for, and he drives, assisting him on his missions, is the Knight Industries 2000, a heavily modified Pontiac Trans Am named Kit. Voiced by Mr. Feeney.
Yeah.
Feeney!
Holy cow.
Yeah. So this show, 86 episodes, and it was kind of a cultural phenomenon in the early 80s. I had a plastic big wheel of Knight Rider. It was
also
a kit big wheel. Amy, you had that too?
I had that big wheel also.
I envied Amazing. That big wheel. Did not have it.
I had no idea the big wheel existed.
Yep.
You missed out, so, dude.
I just wanted to jump in with everyone else there.
This was the show that kind of shot David Hasselhoff to fame. He had been on The Young and the Restless for a few years before this, but this was really the show that put him on the map. He plays Michael Knight, and he just refuses to button up those shirts. He's got
to
let the old chest fuzz show
at
all times.
It was 1984, and they all did that. It's fine. My bigger problem was that his shirt seemed to be held, like the fabric seemed to be held together purely through will. Like, if he stopped thinking about his shirt, the molecules would just drift off of his body.
Kind of, yes.
Yeah.
So we are kicking off a month of Halloween and spooky-themed episodes. So I decided to find an episode of Knight Rider called Halloween Night, because every single episode of this show had Knight in the title somehow. And and so we're going to talk about that. So it opens up a couple days before Halloween. So the show had four main characters. Michael, played by David Hasselhoff. There was William Daniels, a.k.a. Mr. Feeny from Boy Meets World, was the voice of Kit. He was uncredited in the series. Edward Mulhare played Devin Miles, who was sort of the older British or English gentleman that ran Flag. He was the figurehead for it, and he gave Michael all of his mission briefings and information. And then we had Patricia McPherson as Dr. Bonnie Barstow, who was the technician. She could reprogram Kit and all this kind of stuff. She was in seasons 1, 3, and 4, but she was written out at the end of the first season. And they replaced her with April Curtis for season 2, but the fans did not like that. And between Edward Mulhare and David Hasselhoff also campaigning for it, they brought her back for the final two seasons. So Bonnie is moving into a new apartment. And also apparently very sick. I don't know. We have no background. She's just drinking. She's pouring onto a spoon what looks like maybe castor oil. I'm not sure. Cough syrup.
Cough syrup. That's 80. That's yeah, that good cough 80s cough syrup. You know, the one with coding in it.
Clearly it is because
thick.
She thick stuff.
She drinks down the cough syrup and complains to the people, you know, the rowdy, loud people in the hallway having a Halloween party to keep it down. And while she's doing that, somebody in a gorilla costume comes by and then they leave. And moments later, they are across the complex in a different apartment. I mean, in literally the time it took her to walk from her front door to her bed, they made it all the way over there. She sees the gorilla attack the woman, choking her in the apartment. He then turns and looks towards her. So she goes for her phone. And I love this part because she goes to grab the phone, which is buried under blankets in her bed. And before she can dial or anything, she just, that cough syrup, because it was, again, this was the good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it hits hard.
Yeah, this was that 180 proof, right? This was,
yeah. On the back of it, it says, do not operate heavy machinery. Exactly. Ensure you have 8 hours to sleep. Yeah. Like, it's a big deal. It's Ambien before we had Ambien.
That's how I figured out I was allergic to alcohol.
Stuff was good. What I love this scene, and I really could, as I was watching it, I could sympathize with her. Because I spent my Dragon Con trip in a hotel room right next to the pool. And I was like, yes, you should be angry. This is, it's awful. Parties that you're not in, is just around you, sucks.
So the next day, Michael shows up bringing her some flowers as kind of a welcome to the, you know, housewarming gift for her new apartment. But somewhere during the morning, I guess, she must have called Devin and let him know what happened, because Michael knows about her seeing something. So we never get to see, like, that she explains to anybody what happened. Just, we kind of walk in after that happened. But Michael's there to investigate, even though Bonnie is like, I love the scene where she gives him a little bit of crap. Like, oh, you're just da da da. And he's like, ouch. No, I'm here to help. When he walks in, too, we get our first view of the spooky groundskeeper maintenance guy for the place. And they're not subtle about him being a bad guy, right?
So because when she sees the murder, right, I was like, well, that's kind of Rear Window, huh? And then I was like, oh, no, it actually is. Okay, all right, no, they've gone all the way. Fine.
But then when Michael walks in and the camera pans over to that hedge, and here's the maintenance guy just stands up from behind it and starts trimming the hedges and the musical cue, and it's like, okay, we're
well, all right,
we have just tossed subtlety right out the window. We're 4 minutes in. This is cool. And then I also like when Michael goes inside and he hands her the flowers, which she can't smell anything because of her cold or whatever.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But then she's like, well, I need to find a vase that I haven't unpacked yet. The one I have is being used as a juice canister or whatever. Yep. So then Michael just picks up the can that had the juice in it. He's like, well, just use this.
I don't understand how pineapple juice is like the only holdover in the canned juice category, right? Like pineapple juice is like, yes, I'm going to still be a giant can. I will not be a carton.
There is no other way to get it.
No.
No. Well, the acid in the pineapple would eat anything. So True. Pineapple's the only food that eats you back, you know.
That's a fair
And again,
point.
This was, you know, mid-80s. They just canned everything.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So she explains to him what she saw, and they go check out the apartment. So they go over there, knock on the door, nobody answers, knock on the door, nobody answers. So what do you do? Well, obviously you try the door handle, right?
Sure.
Sure.
It's unlocked. So they go inside, and it's empty. And she swears it was all furnished and there was stuff in there. She couldn't have seen any of that. She saw a white wall behind a gorilla.
Yeah.
But she claims, of course, everything was there, blah, blah, blah. Well, Michael's like, all right, let's go. So he decides to go to the neighbors and find out about the party, right? So he goes to the...
He's having a slow week. He's like, yeah, all right.
There's no international espionage going on. He's got nothing from Devon. So he's like, yeah, fine.
It's a holiday week. He's got some time.
Yeah.
So he goes to the apartment and he talks to the woman and asks her, her name is Denise, and asks her if anybody came to the party dressed as a gorilla, which she claims, no one did. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I'll leave you to it then. And as he's leaving, he sees a little tuft of fur tucked into a doorknob. And, okay, it's a big old hunk of fur. So he grabs that and leaves.
Under the part of the doorknob, there's no way your hair would get stuck there unless that was, one, a bad doorknob, or two, let me plant some evidence.
Yeah.
Well, having seen the maintenance guy, it could just be a loose doorknob.
This is true.
Can we also just take a step back and talk about how in the 80s, a single woman just let some stranger dude into her apartment to have a discussion for no good reason?
Well, we do
find out. I was
going to
go there, too.
We do find out it's a singles building.
Mm-hmm.
Which I feel like Bonnie did not actually want a part of, right? Like, it feels like this was in her price range, and she's like, yeah, all right, but please just leave me alone.
Kind of, yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was curious who would pick up on the fact that, like, Michael just sort of invites himself into the apartment, and Denise is just like, yeah, sure, come on in.
She's
just in a silky bathrobe and heels. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. On a different channel, this becomes something else.
Yeah. I'm a private investigator here to investigate your privacy. Mm-hmm.
So,
or it's an episode of Knight Rider. You know, it's either way.
50-50. So Michael leaves and he takes the tuft of fur out to the car where Kit is being... how do I put this? Not
hexed.
Abused. Hexed. There we go. He's being hexed by a witch, Esmeralda, who wants, she wants Kit as her witchmobile.
Mm-hmm.
So, just
I mean,
random.
Doesn't everyone? Like, yeah, sure. Why is, it's not that weird.
So Michael has Kit analyze the fur, which is genuine gorilla fur.
80s were a wild time, guys.
Yes. And
who shaved that gorilla? That's my question.
Well, and not only that, but he makes the immediate jump that it's obviously from a gorilla costume. Who in their right mind would be renting out genuine gorilla fur costumes? So he has Kit start.
Somebody,
you know,
PETA's knocking the door on.
So Michael heads back to the building. And on his way back in, a mysterious set of hands suddenly shoves a plant pot with a plant in it off the third floor balcony.
With an audio sting.
Mm-hmm.
Very important.
Yeah, we have to have that. So Michael runs into the same apartment. It's apartment 302. Goes in there, and the guy's trying to sneak away, and he grabs him, pushes him up against the wall. He's like, who are you? What are you doing? Da, da, da. Turns out the guy's name is Norman Baines.
Yes. Sure is.
Norman on the Baines. Nose.
Yeah, that sounds
good. It somehow gets worse, though. Like,
subtlety.
Later in this episode, the subtlety somehow gets even worse.
Mm-hmm.
We're already at the subtle level of, like, a running chainsaw.
Yeah.
And so...
Oh, good.
So as
it's
Michael is kind of...
homage, guys.
Yes. As Michael is interrogating this guy, Norman Baines, the building owner walks in. And it's like, well... What are you here for? Do you want to rent the apartment? Because the apartment has apparently been empty for 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
So Michael leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And then we cut to Bonnie in her apartment. She's cleaning, and she's like cleaning off the top of what looks like, I don't know, a smoke detector or something on the wall. And it knocks a key down, but she doesn't see that. But then she finds the key on the floor and just assumes it's one of the 87 keys she needs for this building. Because apparently there's a key to the door, the key to the door to the apartment, the laundry room, the gate outside. There's a snack.
Well, you
cart
get a singles
somewhere.
Community, you gotta want to weed out the sketchy people.
Yeah. You gotta be able to work. You have to be able to get through 18 doors using mm-hmm. 17 different keys to get to your apartment.
Because, see, if you've already, that's why Denise just let him in. Because if he's gotten past all of that, he has clearly been vetted at least enough to get into the building and to her door. So
that's true.
He's probably fine.
That's
good.
That's true. While this is going on, she starts to hear water coming from her bathroom, like the shower running. So she goes into the bathroom, pulls back the shower curtain, and the woman that she saw killed is laying in the bathtub.
Oh, my gosh.
And she freaks out and runs
As
out and finds
do.
Michael. Yeah, she finds Michael. She calls him in. Michael goes in, and the body's gone.
Dun, dun, dun.
And there's no water.
And there's no water. Yeah.
No water in the tub.
And
let's not forget the subtlety of hearing the Psycho theme in the shower at
oh,
this
yeah,
point
no,
as well.
Did not, yeah.
We didn't.
Yeah, we hear the strings.
That was, mm-hmm.
Yep.
That was there.
So she's worried that she's losing her mind, that the fever gave her hallucinations, whatever. Michael's like, no, we're going to figure it out. Somebody's trying to make you feel crazy.
The best part is when he's like, when he asks her how she's doing, like before this, and she's like, well, physically, I feel better. It's like, okay,
yeah.
All right.
So we go to a commercial, we come back, and Michael is breaking into Central Costumes. Again, subtlety and like originality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We
Which
get
is
a quick
just the back lot. Like this,
yeah.
They were like, yes. this is ideal. We, mm-hmm. we have
yeah.
a prop room.
Yes, this is perfect.
We don't have to get anything, you know, releases filed.
Yep.
Just yeah.
This is good. We're just going to go out
easy.
Back.
He has a quick scare with a Halloween decoration that almost axes him, which is dumb. And then he finds the one rack of costumes in the entire place that has
it's all
the
like
one
wall sconces.
Mm-hmm.
Like he walks down a whole hall of wall sconces and chandeliers, and you're like, all
yeah.
right.
But he finds
costume store.
Yeah,
and he finds the one rack of costumes with the one gorilla costume that mm-hmm. still has the tag on it. And it was rented by Denise. So
oh,
Michael's
no.
like, all right, I'm going to go lay the smack down. He takes the costume. He steals it from Central Costumes.
From Central Costumes.
He says something like, I guess I just rented a gorilla suit. No, you didn't. You stole it.
Yeah.
You stole a gorilla suit from a place that has no security, even though it sells a gorilla suit made of authentic gorilla hair. Like,
right. That is.
Okay.
I don't
think he really pushes this private eye like a long way in this show. Like I'm amazed that people mm-hmm. let him do just about anything.
Yeah.
It's like he's not a cop.
It's the Sam and Max rule, right?
He
he's
tells
freelance
us that.
Police.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, freelance police. Yeah, I'm not a cop. Then why I'm not answering your stupid questions. Get out of my house.
He is going exactly. for people who are operating above the law. We
that's
should be
right.
thankful mm-hmm. that he's out there with his chest hair and being all shiny. His back was real sweaty at one point, and I was like, that's
yeah.
that polyester. Mm-hmm. You can't. You need something that breathes, my dude.
Or keep the jacket yeah. on.
Yeah.
So he heads back to Denise's apartment, and when he gets there to confront her about having her having rented that costume, Bonnie's there. And Denise is introducing Bonnie to Simon.
Mm-hmm.
We're just throwing characters at us. No idea who this dude is. No idea his relationship to Denise, but there he is.
Singles building.
Well, there's a smart way to do whodunits where you know all the characters ahead of time, and then there's the dumb way to do whodunits where you just go, crap, this is getting too simple. Introduce some more things. Throw more people in there.
We haven't even gotten there yet. So,
no.
But Michael starts to be like, all right, I know that you rented the costume. Why'd you lie to me? And she's like, I didn't lie to you. You asked me if anyone came to the party dressed as a gorilla. It's like, oh, okay. All right. So
now
you're suspicious.
Are we 7 years old?
Exactly.
Semantics.
I mean.
Lie of omission. So Michael's getting a little more steamed up, and Bonnie's like, all right, let's go. She grabs him, and they leave.
Because she's trying to get it. She's finally like, oh, I get it. All right, this is actually a great place to live. I see now.
Because
and Michael
she met
rolls
Simon.
In being all shiny chested and hairy, trying to ruin everything. That was a good part, was because Denise at one point, you know, he's like, are you sure? When, you know, he's asking if anybody came as a gorilla. And she's like, and he's like, are you sure? She's like, yeah, I would have remembered that. I like hairy guys. I was like,
yeah.
So Michael finds out that the suit was cleaned before it was returned, and he knows
and
the cleaner is.
We get his he gets a bad boy point for racism.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was like, you were doing so good, 80s show. You were doing so good. Then you just went hard.
Yeah. Thankfully, strike. It was the one line that was like that in the entire show.
Yeah.
The entire episode anyway. Yeah.
So it was one strike, but...
Yeah. He heads to the cleaner to find out more information. Then we cut to just a random house, which is the building owner for Bonnie's building. And he's on the phone with somebody talking about how Knight is involved. And, well, the costume is your issue now. And you're going to have to do something about it. So Michael's leaving the cleaner, throws the costume in the trunk, which of course Kit has to be sassy about. Like, that thing better
not
shed.
We did miss the part, the very sophisticated part, where Kit confirmed that the hair sample had matched the costume. Because they did overlay perfectly. Mm-hmm. Oh, it was really good. It was
good.
That
killed me.
I screamed. I was so excited.
CSI, eat your heart out.
To their credit. But to their credit, they used a different image for the second tuft of fur, right? So it wasn't, they didn't just reuse the same graphic to show like gorilla fur matching gorilla fur. They used a different graphic of gorilla fur matching. So I give them credit there. But Michael, on his way out of the cleaner, suddenly a guy in a different gorilla costume while driving a car, because why not, tries to run him down on the road. So then we get a car chase.
Kit is so nonchalant about it. Michael, look out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Kit shows
didn't
no
program
emotion.
Urgency into no. the voice at all. Mr. Feeney's in the booth just like, get out.
And
I'm a robot.
And he slides over the roof.
Dude, yeah, he jumped over it.
Does a full-on roof slide. That was great. That's where those polyester pants come in handy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because
all
one,
I wanted to do as a
that
kid.
Car was low to the ground, and two, David Hasselhoff is a tall man, so
yeah,
he made that.
There was one point
easy.
Where he's walking through the doorway, and I was like, "How tall is he? He is 6'4". Mm-hmm. I had no idea.
Holy cow! Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah.
I love Phil Rude in the chat brings up the guys driving the car while wearing gorilla costume, or a gorilla costume, not the gorilla costume, because we've got that one.
It's in
this one's probably made of mohair.
He never returned the second one. He kept the second one as backup.
Okay. That makes sense.
So then we get a car chase. And sure enough, the car chase even has a giant pane of glass on the back of a truck that nearly gets run over by the first car.
Yep.
That car speeds through the alley. And they're unloading it in an alley for whatever reason. So the first car...
they're backing out. The whole truck is backing out.
The plot demands it, Travis.
Mm-hmm.
Just go with it. Go with it, because we need the greatest cut to commercial in television history.
Right, so the first car flies past, and then Michael is coming up, and he sees the truck just keeps backing up in the way. So he hits the turbo boost button on Kit, which also apparently has a ramp deployment feature that will send him in the air. And so it sends him into the air, and... coming back from commercial, we see the car crash through and land, and then Michael's like, where did he go? And Kit says, I don't know, he's off the scanner, and we cut away. Like, we had to have the break right there.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody got up to refill their Pepsi.
As long as you had somebody yelling that
you don't want to miss when that comes back.
And Steven, having not seen this show before, I need to let you know they're contractually obligated to do a turbo boost at least once or twice every episode.
Yeah.
Oh,
you're
going to
get
that
at the very least.
Mm-hmm. I loved it.
Yeah.
So after Michael's lost the other car, we cut to later that night, Norman arriving at the apartment building again, looking very suspicious. Now he's got a bag. He's got a canvas bag, and he's
where
going into his apartment.
Good Lord.
And he dressed like MacGruber.
Yeah.
Like, that killed me. Like, he's totally MacGruber every time I saw him.
Yeah, so Norman is heading into his apartment, looking around, looking suspicious, carrying that big bag or whatever. And now they're leaning so much more into the psycho stuff. The more of the psycho music is playing. Mm-hmm. And he gets inside, and then Michael confronts him, scares the crap out of him, asks him why he's got a giant knife strapped to his boot. And
giant Bowie knife.
Yeah, huge it's like this Bowie big. Knife. And Norman confesses. He did it. He's been doing it for years. And here is where we're going to play a quick little game that I like to call, what the hell? I'm going to play you something. I'm going to play you a sound, and I want to know if any of you can tell me what he said here. I have figured it out by this point, okay? But we'll start. I'm gonna start with Amy. Amy, you get the first crack at this. Mm-hmm. What the hell does he say here?
I always read a passport tonight before Halloween.
As I always read the pumpkin patch the night before Halloween.
That's the take they went with.
Yeah.
Which means that either that was the only take, or, and this is what I like to believe, that was the best take.
Best take.
Did you see this guy talking earlier when he had him shoved up against the wall when we first meet him? The dude's spit is thick. I mean, like, I saw it was just flopping around in his mouth as he was trying to speak. This guy needs a big glass of water before shooting any scene. Like, that's what happened. He can't get those words out past the mucus stuck in his mouth.
One last time. I have to play this one last
time.
That's
where Bonnie got the cold from.
Yeah, this is Norman Bates, kid, nasty spit,
licking doorknobs. Oh,
this was too good to not capture Norman Bates.
I always read a passport tonight before Halloween.
Which is so funny. Now we were talking pre-show about kids sneezing in our faces, and we have it on this episode.
Slow down, Norman. Yeah, take a breath.
Hey, you want to run that one again? No, we're just gonna go with. We're just gonna. All right, we'll just go with that. That's fine.
Film is expensive, Travis.
I feel like this could be. It could be a potential second strike. If they're like, no, he's simple.
Okay, yeah,
I'm gonna. There's a yellow card on this one. Mm-hmm. Yellow card.
I feel like the producers are just telling, if we shoot it again, we're just going to have to buy Kodak.
So Michael sits down with Norman and says, okay, look, no, why did you take the gorilla suit to the cleaner? And he's like, well, I did it for Denise. You know, she asked me to. She offered me $5, but I said no because she's my friend. And Michael's like, well, maybe I'll just go ask her. And he's like, you can go ask her. Oh, wait, no, you can't. She's not there. And I love this exchange. This was the moment watching it where I had the realization and the memory of, like, okay, everybody's in on the joke of what this show is. Like, the people making it know. Because Norman is like, no, you can't go and see her. She's left, or she's gone.
She's gone.
And Michael's response is like, why do you make that sound so final? He's like, no, I just mean till tomorrow. He's like, you know what? Okay. And leaves. But it was just, I'm like, yeah, Hasselhoff knew exactly what show he was involved in here. Like,
oh, yeah.
I do want to say, there's no way Norman is carving those tiny pumpkins with that giant knife. It's not happening.
But he does take the knife to the pumpkin to end the scene. So,
yes.
With, again,
with the weirdest sound. Yeah. It wasn't even the right pumpkin carving sound. It was like sandpaper, you know, on a fish. I don't even know what that sound was.
It was something else.
I half expected him to cut that all the way out, and we find something weird in those pumpkins for some reason.
So Michael and Bonnie end up deciding we're going to go talk to Denise again, and they head back to the apartment building. And when they get there, Simon just happens to be there too. Wondering where Denise is, because Denise was supposed to meet him to play tennis.
I mean, he's handsome and blonde. If he's not in a polo shirt and a sweater, it's not a 1980s television show.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
That's a good point.
Well, he had tennis shorts on that were about, they had like an inch and a half inseam.
Yeah, if he stepped big, great. You'd see his nut just drop out of there.
And he starts hitting on Bonnie hardcore. Mm-hmm. Like, he is, again, not subtle whatsoever.
No.
I could not tolerate a person that stood that close. Like, you know when you run into somebody you kind of know, and then you end up walking in the same direction, you're like, crap, I really don't want to be talking to this person. That's what this whole scene gave me anxiety, made me feel that way. I'm like, nope, I don't. I will do a whole circle around this building to pretend I had to go somewhere else.
In my car, I forgot.
Bye.
But on top of that, with Michael right there next to her, like,
yeah.
Let's take that weird factor up a little bit more.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He needed to unbutton another shirt button and let more of the chest hair out, like,
yeah,
you know, as a warning sign. Yes.
Yeah.
So Michael heads off to see Denise. Simon asks out Bonnie to a party, but she ends up turning the tables and says, well, why don't you take me to my party? They make the date. She heads for her apartment. Nobody answers at Denise's place. So Michael comes back out. And once again, Simon's like, boy, I hope everything works out with Bonnie, okay? She's a real great gal, you know? She's just, and he's just talking about her and how wonderful she is, and asks about the hallucinations because he knows about that, I guess.
He's known her for 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Yeah, 5 minutes, and he's totally into her.
And perfectly okay talking to her friend that he knows is her friend about this. Like,
yeah.
Whew. I'd hate for her to be broken.
Yeah.
So Bonnie's in the apartment and she calls him up and her place has been ransacked, just tossed. And while they're looking
around. I'm not going to lie. It took me a minute to figure that out because I've been unpacking.
Same.
So like, yeah. I didn't, I was like, what? Wasn't it like that?
Yep.
Exactly.
Which might be a comment on how I live, but it's fine.
As they're looking around for, you know, whatever evidence they can find, Bonnie goes into the bathroom, and yet again in the bathroom, something weird happens. We see her first look in the tub, and there's nothing in there, and then she turns around and is just staring, and she calls Michael in, and in come Michael and Simon.
No,
and
she doesn't call him. He like goes to find her,
okay.
And she
that's right.
Creepy point.
Because in the mirror is some kind of a goblin demon spouting
gibberish.
It's one
of the door knockers from Labyrinth.
Yes.
And it's just spouting gibberish. And
it keeps saying, can I tell you what I think it was saying when I heard it? It kept yelling, no regrets, space heater. That's what I heard every time it said a word was no regrets, space heater.
Okay.
I was like, what does that mean?
I do have a question.
Uh-huh.
Did anyone hear it and not immediately know that it was just backwards?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yep, absolutely.
But Michael's like,
I didn't because I wasn't thinking that hard about an episode of Knight Rider.
I mean, that's fine.
Well, it turns out that there was a holographic projector installed in the bathroom.
It was my favorite part, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.
The holographic projector with a micro cassette.
I want Bill Duran to build me that prop so I can just have it.
That works through that grill, sure.
It's fine.
In multiple directions too, because it had to project into the bathtub, a convincing corpse, as
he could have swapped it when ransacking the apartment.
I suppose.
Put in another tape and turn it around. I'm not saying
because the tape
had the sound.
Also had the water sound.
The tape had the sound. All right. But
I just love that it was technology we don't have with technology that's totally archaic. At this point, micro cassette, holographic projector combined. Genius.
Mm-hmm.
So Michael sends the audio to Kit to analyze, and Kit's like, yeah, it's backwards.
It's not complicated.
It's not difficult. Here's the audio, and it's an address. It's 36 mm-hmm. Fairview Road.
And this is where subtlety just all pretense is gone.
This is plot demands it stuff, because I'm like, why would you broadcast your address backwards?
So all right. So Michael and Bonnie head to that address, 36 Fairview Road, and they pull up, mm-hmm. and it is gated off,
mm-hmm.
and at the top of the hill is mm-hmm. the house from Psycho,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
with the music from Psycho playing. Not a house that looks kind of like the house from
No.
The house from Psycho.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Michael's like, this looks familiar.
That was the best part. This kind of look, nah.
Yeah.
So they head up to the house. It's creepy. There's all sorts of sounds and stuff. And then they see, I think on the garage, like a separate garage, a door open up and there's a light swinging back and forth. So Michael's like, wait here. I'm going to go check it out. And he heads in that direction. And Bonnie just follows him right in. Doesn't wait at all. And inside they find the dead body. And as soon as that revelation is made, all the doors slam shut.
Yep.
So now they're stuck in there. And gas starts to pour in.
Gas.
Mm-hmm. Just gas.
I really no more specificity.
I love how David Hasselhoff looked like he just smelled a fart when he first smelled it.
He tries to break open like the like barn doors. And,
yeah. So,
and my favorite is that Kit's like, I detect gas. Yeah, dog, we know.
Yeah, we smell it. We also detect it. We have noses.
Yes, Kit. So get up here now.
Yeah, Michael calls Kit up. Help. Kit drives up, uses a grappling hook to pull the chain off the doors.
I thought he was just going to ram into the door.
I know,
no.
Me too.
Nope. Yeah. No, so much better to use the grappling hook. And they get out. End of scene.
Yeah.
We cut to a commercial. We come back. And come to find out, the woman's name is Linda. She used to live in Bonnie's apartment. The house where they found her dead body is also owned by the owner of Bonnie's apartment building. It belonged to his mother. That was the other nice scene. Again, subtle.
Yeah.
So that ends. Michael's like, I'm going to go do some more digging. I'm going to go talk to this guy. So Michael heads to Mr. Grant's house. And who's there but Denise? So that's a weird reveal. So he goes inside. Mm-hmm. Well, Denise is Mr. Grant's daughter.
Yep.
So there's that is brought up to light. And then he shoos her away. And Michael confronts him. He's like, all right, I know that she was living in that apartment building. What was she to you? Blah, blah, blah. Turns out she was, I guess, extorting money, taking money that belonged to him and his family, his children, all of this kind of stuff. And he gets very upset with Michael and tells Michael to leave. And Michael, as he's leaving, and it's one of my favorite things. It was a great line delivery. Mm-hmm. Again, showing the quality of this show. Is as Michael's leaving, he says this.
But I got some special effects of my own, like making you disappear for 20 years, man.
I wrote that down. It's the man.
The man at the end. Totally.
It really
I literally quoted that in my notes because I thought it was so stupid. Man. Like, it was the worst delivery ever.
I mean, it wasn't given really good quality material here.
No.
He had something about, I've never watched episode Knight Rider until now, but something about Hasselhoff's delivery in multiple lines throughout this episode just had this ending of just like, it's like, I'm chatting, I'm doing my acting thing, and then just, I don't even care. Like, it would just tank right there at the end with like the last word every time.
So they leave, and now we cut to that night at the party. Bonnie shows up at the party with a guy in a tuxedo and a pumpkin mask, which, by the way, was a silver shamrock pumpkin mask from Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
I saw the thing on the back. I didn't know what that meant.
Yeah, I thought that was a nice touch. And it's not Simon who was supposed to be bringing here. No, he had business to attend to. It's Norman.
Business.
Yes.
Yeah.
So she's there with Norman, and meanwhile, Michael is apparently on his way back. He had to go somewhere for something. They don't explain anything in this episode, including this.
Okay, we got a timeout for a second, though. Because she's dressed as Scarlett O'Hara.
Uh-huh.
And he's dressed as Rhett. But they're not going to the party together.
No.
What? You don't do a couple's costume with someone that you're not going with. That just because it's not like a group thing. They're not all there. Like, it's just
no,
that
but that was part of it
so
is there was
good.
There was some kind of romantic tension that I think they wanted to have, especially in season one, that they sort of were maybe touching on, but like not in this episode at all.
No. I have in a little bit I'll get to my comments about my feelings about Michael Knight's romantic life, because I had feelings in this episode.
But you did.
Did anybody else notice that his Rhett Butler costume was just like a pencil mustache and soul glow all throughout his hair? Like, all I could think was like he just from it just all over, just greased down real good.
It was soul glow, a John Waters mustache, and a Colonel Sanders.
Colonel
tuxedo.
Sanders, like for yes. a hot yeah. second, Colonel I was like, Sanders. Colonel Sanders. Oh wait, no.
It made me think of the days when I was at camp and we'd find whatever we could find at Goodwill to make a costume of a character.
Yeah.
I mean, he had perfect access to Central Costumes or whatever that
right?
was. Yeah. He was in there before.
He had a very good gorilla costume in the trunk. Yeah.
With authentic gorilla fur.
Yes. A real gorilla costume. So as Michael's making his way back, he's trying to find out more information about Grant. And he finds out that, he was married and had one child. He's like, well, wait a minute. He said children. And sure enough, he had a child from a previous marriage. And then, Michael asks Kit, well, what's his name? And we don't get to see it, but we get Michael's reaction, and he has to speed up to get there. And he's trying to call Devin.
Mm-hmm.
So at the party, Norman is acting a little strange, as he has been all episode, and wants to go sit down. So Bonnie takes him to a couch in the hallway. And they
the
go
dark
to a different
hallway.
Yes, they go to a different part of the house away from the party. And that's when Norman starts acting even weirder. Like,
to be fair, Norman seems like he could be a guy with social anxiety. So maybe he does just need like some quiet time in the chill out room.
Yeah. But then he starts breathing really heavily and like just arms extended, stalking towards her.
Yeah. He gets a little handsy.
He read those signals way wrong.
Yeah. Pest.
And then Michael busts in and they're so now he's searching the house for Bonnie. Immediately going upstairs for whatever reason. I'm not sure why, but that's where he goes. Bonnie gets away from Norman by going into Devin's office and locking the door. Uh-huh. And then she turns around, and there's a guy in a Cylon helmet.
Uh-huh.
And it's Simon.
That was the weirdest costume combo I've ever
seen.
Yeah,
it really was. It was like a swashbuckling Cylon. It was odd.
Mm-hmm. And then he had face paint under the mask. Like, what?
Yeah.
Why do both? Mask or face paint? What are we doing here?
Yeah. And she's like, well, wait, I thought you had business. And he goes, well, my business was you. Because he's the killer. Dun, 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 dun. Yeah. Oh, dear. So Michael ends up finding it. Because he finds
the classic villain thing. Of
monologuing?
Telling her exactly what's going like, come on, my dude.
Mm-hmm. Villains love to gloat, man.
They do. They do.
Yeah, but you got to finish the job. Like, gloat to a corpse. Like,
yeah, so.
Well, he's got to say it for her so that he can have the cool fight with Michael in a few minutes. So,
yeah.
Okay, so they find Norman. Norman tells him, oh, he's down in the office there. Michael goes and, like, jump kicks the door off its hinges. It was a wonderful, like, just
couldn't break down
amazing.
The rotting down barn door.
Yeah, barn door
at the
too
Bates
much
motel.
But this sturdy English oak door, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets in there. There's a fight, which is wonderfully choreographed. And look, maybe I've been just a little bit spoiled by watching a lot of Highlander, and the fighting in that being good, because this wasn't.
Or having a real sword.
Yeah, not aluminum tape on cardboard,
but
which is what his
sword
was.
Something. Did he? Because I was trying to figure this out way harder than I absolutely should have. But so my theory is that he had that there was a real sword in there that he had disguised to look like cardboard so that he could bring it, because it did sparks off of the the candelabra and the leather chair.
No, I think they wanted us to believe it was a real sword. I don't think they were able to get a real sword for insurance purposes or something.
Probably not. Well, they could nearly run him over with a car, but they can't get a sword.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's the fight. It also has yet another brilliant line, both in writing and delivery.
Because
there's, of course, this is a fight in an 80s action television show. There's banter going on. And Michael says at one point, I wonder what will happen, or I wonder who will figure this out, or something like that. And Simon's reaction to that is,
your wondering days are over, Knight!
and he swings at him. And it's brilliant because it's straight out of the villain playbook. But it's like, you don't have a relationship with this person to like to say a line like that to them.
No.
Like, there's no predetermined.
Met him yesterday. Yeah.
You have minutes of interaction with each other. And and you immediately jump to,
your wandering days are over, Knight.
So he distracts him with a curtain and gets away out the window. And then we get yet another car chase. And this one is our second use of the turbo boost slash ramp deployment system. The invisible ramp gets deployed.
That's because... the turbo boost. You jump.
Okay. All right. Yeah. All right. But at one point, all right. So early on, like when he first goes to visit Bonnie, Michael does the wink, click, finger guns, which I don't know if you know, but that is a bisexual hallmark. And so I declared canonically. And then at one point during this chase scene, he goes, "I want that man." And I was like, "Oh, see, there you go. There
you go." There you got him pegged.
So it is written. So it is done.
There you go.
So we have our second car chase. And Simon in, I couldn't figure out what car he was driving. But he drives into a drive-in. And so Michael deploys turbo boost and ends up getting into the drive-in because he can't drive in the same way that Simon did. No, there are cars in the way.
Because there's cars in the way.
Okay, time out. Just one real quick thing.
So
before this, we have to show the people in the drive-in and we have to show the nerdy kid who's, you know, the
and
one that's got to tell you. Those special effects are terrible. I know special effects.
Yep. While they're wearing their paper 3D glasses. So Michael
to his girlfriend or whatever, he's just like, whatever, watch the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he turbo boosts right through the screen. Kit smashes through the screen, and then they track down Simon, and it's one more punch, and story over. That's it. No wrap up. No,
with one more great line from Michael, though. Show's over, man.
And all right, so then this is the other one, right? All of the people at the theater, like at the drive-in, are applauding that he caught and clocked this guy. They have no context for what's going on.
None whatsoever.
No.
But good job, Rhett Butler.
That guy could be a murderer.
Good job.
Yeah.
But they knew he was punched Rhett Butler. Him.
They did. They were like, good job, Rhett. Yeah. And then he does that was good. The like,
the little pose,
the, like, suit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, fixing his suit. And do he didn't. I was very disappointed. At no point did he say he didn't give a damn, and I was so upset. I was waiting for it the whole time.
That's not the movie they're spoofing. He couldn't use that line.
Oh, yeah,
that's true.
But I'm just shocked that they got out of their cars. Like, did you see where they ended up parked? They could have easily kept this car chase going. Like, it's not like they were blocked in.
And
like, the dude could have just reversed and I'm out of there.
Everyone that was parked at the drive-in turned on their headlights. Because otherwise, the one car that was driving around that Michael was trying to find would have been terribly obvious.
That's a good point.
Well, I mean, that turbo boost, that second one, he flew like 35 feet in the air.
At
like,
a right angle, by the way, because the driveway was right here. You'd have to go straight right to make it through
the
screen.
Well, traditionally, drive-in theaters have a ramp behind the screen. That's the only explanation, because it happens so often.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And he smashed through, by the way, like, that's a concrete wall.
Yeah.
Okay. If you've ever seen a drive-in theater screen, they're solidly built.
What part of turbo boost are you really not grasping here?
But then that's it. The story just ends there. We get no resolution to anything. Nope. I was like thinking, okay, so Simon was the killer, but then who was Grant talking to on the phone? Did Mr. Grant know that Simon was the killer? What was Denise's role in everything? How do these three people get, any of this? Nope, none. We don't get any of that. Nothing at all. Just he knocked the guy out, show's over. Instead, we get a silly little moment where Michael and Devin show up at Bonnie's apartment, and we meet Esmeralda again, only now she's not Esmeralda anymore. Because that was just for Halloween.
No,
Sure, until she walked by flowers that kept wilting on her way
That's because of what was in her like hot dish that she brought.
That
because
Kit analyzed.
Told him like,
don't eat that, Michael.
I just thought she farted when she was walking past because it was really zoomed in on her butt, and every time she walked past, they would die. And I was like, ooh, that's a red flag. Watch out for that.
Silent but deadly.
Yeah. Ooh, boy.
What's in the dish? You don't want to know. Yeah. No, I actually do. Thanks. That's like your job. Could you just tell me?
Yeah.
And then we never get the resolution to that either.
No, I don't know what's in
there. Because that's where we end on. He opens the thing.
Yeah. It's like he opens it up and then freeze frame. But it's like, Kit, you have two jobs. Smashing through walls in turbo boost mode and analyzing things that I ask you to analyze. Don't tell me I don't want to know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's Knight Rider was such a... And this was Knight Rider, like in a nutshell. This is a great, great episode of Knight Rider because the show was just goofy and it knew it.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is, like, it was created by Glenn A. Larson. To give you an idea of some of the other stuff, if you don't recognize that name off the top of your head, Glenn A. Larson is responsible for either producing, writing, or in some cases creating things like The $6 Million Man, Quincy M.E., what else we got here? Battlestar Galactica was his.
All right.
Buck Rogers in the 25th Century, which, by the way, the first time we meet Esmeralda, that costume that she's wearing, that dress with the huge collar and all that, that was from Buck Rogers. It was actually originally worn by Julie Newmar.
No.
Dang. And they
I mean, why spend money redesigning things?
Sure.
You know?
It's an homage.
Oh, yes, of course.
Some other stuff that he did, BJ and the Bear. He was co-creator of Magnum PI, The Fall Guy. This, Manimal.
Manimal.
Automan, which if you've not, go to the Wikipedia page of Automan. We need to do an episode of that at some point. It ran for 13. Excellent. They made 13 episodes. It ran 12 of them. And the pictures alone
look
amazing.
So we need the 13th is what you're saying. We need to find the unreleased 13th.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I don't think we do.
So he, Glenn Larson is not known for his hard-hitting, gritty style of television and film. And this show is the perfect encapsulation of that because it's just a silly detective show. Like he's literally, like we said, he's freelance police. He just does whatever he wants to. In his indestructible vehicle. Does make you want a Pontiac Trans Am, though, quite a bit.
Yeah,
it does.
When I told my mom that this is what we were watching this week, she got all excited to tell me that when she and my dad like went to a car show relatively recently, there was one there, and it looked just like it, and she was so excited. And nice. I was like, Mom, I had no idea.
I had a friend who had an old Firebird Trans Am, and that thing was so much fun to ride around in.
Did it have a turbo boost button?
No, it did not. Unfortunately, we couldn't be so lucky. What I loved about this episode was just the total cheese ball of like how hard they pushed the psycho angle of things, and it was funny because the shower scene. Where she finds a dead body, it initially, like, I wasn't paying enough attention to the music, so it didn't hit me right away. But then when Norman gets out of the car and I start hearing the psycho theme, and I'm like, oh, and they did the same thing just a minute ago with the shot. What the hell? Yeah. Also, this was very timely 80s stuff. I have another sound clip I want to play. These were some of the costumes that were at Denise's party the night before. Timely.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
These are timeless references.
We had at least a dozen Boy Georges, a couple of breakdancing mummies, and one John DeLorean.
I love the John DeLorean.
A John DeLorean. Like, what kind of a reference is that? That reference was dated in 1985.
Mm-hmm.
The year after this
He's
was made.
Already in jail for cocaine by then.
So that got me quite a bit. Another audio piece, because I have to, was when Michael comes into the apartment and they're having their little party, mm-hmm. and it's the first thing that Simon says to him is just...
Nothing fancy, cheese, a little Beaujolais.
I was like, all right, yeah, sure. Like, nothing fancy.
At the singles apartment,
whatever that means.
Yes.
Yep.
Correct. You've always got cheese and a little Beaujolais.
Exactly.
I want to move into this apartment building.
That made me feel like Steve Rogers in the first Captain America, like fondue. Okay.
Yeah, pretty much. All right, so Steven, this being your first episode of Knight Rider that you've ever seen, what'd you think?
I just missed out on something so great. I loved every minute of this. Like, we've watched some shows where I've just been like, okay, that's all right, you know. I was glued to the screen. I don't know why. Because, like, part of my brain is going, this is stupid. And the other part is going, this is awesome. And I want, like, that... Somewhere in there, that stupid and awesome together mixture, you get just some magical thing. I loved it. I loved it. I loved watching David Hasselhoff do what David Hasselhoff does. I haven't seen a movie with him this young before. I mean, I watched Baywatch, you know. I know what he looked like then, but I didn't really know what he looked like in Knight Rider. He's kind of got a baby face, you know? If it wasn't for his chest hair hanging out everywhere... That dude's like, he's got a bit of a baby face, but the puffy hair makes up for it, you know? All that get up going on.
Well,
I loved
it,
Travis.
And look, this was the 80s, so chest hair was big at that point. We're coming off the 70s. That was the look, right? You didn't wax back then.
Yeah.
He didn't start waxing until 89 in Baywatch.
Yeah. It takes a high degree of confidence to unbutton that many buttons. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah,
like,
it does.
I get it. Yeah. He can do that. I'm not me. No.
No. I'm doing one button maybe, but not three. I'm not. Yeah, all you're missing out. If this show had been made, say, 5 to 10 years later, you would have.
Yep. Or at least tanks. Yeah.
Yep.
There
would
be
tanks. It was the 80s.
I won't even wear a V neck. I'm not even that. I'm all more power to him, you know.
Well, hey, you know what? You're lucky. There are 4 seasons of this show, and they're all on Netflix right now, so you can watch them. Amy, what did you think? Did you have fun traveling back to the world of Michael Knight and Kit?
I wanted to watch all of them all the time. Like, it was so good. I had like, because it's one of those things, right? Like, I feel like I have so little time, right? Like, to consume media, I must consume good media, and I watched this and I said, no, I want to consume fun media. I don't care if it's good. Mm-hmm. It was entertaining as heck, and I just want to watch it forever.
Yep. Audi, how about you? Did you have a good time?
I loved it. I mean, I watched Knight Rider back in the day and loved it. I watched this and loved it, and I was thinking about it today. I was like, we just did 4 episodes of this podcast talking about Jumping the Shark, and Jumping the Shark was modus operandi for this show.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Like,
that was just
no
weekly.
Jumping
and it
the Shark because it's just like, yeah.
That's my secret cap. I'm always jumping the shark.
Exactly.
Like, this show, when you read the breakdown of the show, it's like Detective Michael Long was shot in the face and got reconstructive plastic surgery, and his name was changed to Michael Knight. And now he's a freelance cop.
Yeah.
Like, with an indestructible, technologically superior car. Here's the thing. When we say Jumping the Shark is a weekly occurrence, there are multiple episodes in which David Hasselhoff also plays an evil version of himself.
With the goatee.
Yep.
With the facial hair. With the goatee.
Oh, yeah.
Where he drives a different specialized indestructible vehicle.
Isn't it car?
So.
Yeah.
Well, there's car. Yep. Yeah.
Because that's the episode after this one was Kit versus Car.
Mm-hmm. You guys are lying to me. This is
no.
True.
It's K-A-R-R. I'm not lying.
We are not.
I wish I was, and I'm glad I'm not.
Nope. Season 3, episode 6, glad. Kit versus Car. Let me just read you this real quick, all right? Kit's bad-tempered...
Please.
Kit's bad-tempered prototype Car is found buried in the sand by mechanic John Stanton and his girlfriend Mandy. Car convinces Stanton to replace his damaged parts and give him a new look. Then he sets out to take his revenge on Kit and Michael Knight. After turbo-boosting into the Foundation semi, John and Car take possession of an improved... Hold on. Of an improved laser Bonnie was preparing for Kit to use against his evil twin.
Yeah, because we did miss out on the truck. We didn't get the truck in this episode. We did. Steven, yeah. Steven, the truck is important.
I need to watch all of it. Yes. No sleep for me. I just thank God Andor and Marvel are coming up on a break. I'll have plenty of time. It's great.
Andor's not, but you got Marvel's done for a little while, so
I got time. I'll find the time. I don't watch Game of Thrones, so I got something to slot in. We'll be fine.
Now here's another interesting thing that I found when I was doing a little bit of background on the show is it ran from 82 to 86, and starting in 86 they syndicated it. And channels had the option to syndicate the hour-long episodes with about 3 minutes trimmed off of them, or heavily edited half-hour versions of these episodes. How confusing would a half-hour version of this episode be? They had 45 minutes to try and tell the story, and I still don't know what happened.
They used every bit of that 45 minutes. Yeah. Every bit.
And then you cut it in half. It would just be like Michael showing up with some flowers, and then going in a car chase, and then finding the gorilla costume, and going in another car chase, and finger guns, and the show's over.
Like, yeah.
Oh, it's amazing. But yes, this show not only had Michael Knight with an evil twin, but the car had an evil twin too. Steven, you're going to have some fun. You're in.
I'm watching it.
For some good stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was Knight Rider and the episode Halloween Night, kicking off our Halloween spooky themed episodes. We did get a little bit of feedback this week. So on Twitter, how great was that? That was great, wasn't it? Cartoon Rewatch Podcast said, dug this show growing up. My main memory is only of the two episodes where they took on the evil Michael Knight. The goatee is the giveaway. And Goliath the truck.
Love it.
Yes. And if
I got
you want...
some, I got some feedback from Phil Root, who's in the chat. Sense. Yeah, I posted this myself, and he replied to me. Knight Rider was eight-year-old Phil's jam. This and The Fall Guy were the first non-kid shows I remember being really into. My parents would even let me stay up late to see if there was a very special two-hour episode on. Big highlight of my early TV days.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, this is good stuff. And I'm most excited about the fact that it's available on Netflix right now, which is a service that so many people have. So take advantage of it and watch it. Even if all you do is put it on in the background and listen to that beautiful, beautiful theme. Because...
Doodum, doodum, doodum.
Which
every
has
time
been
I start
sampled,
my truck, I want that to play.
It has been sampled over and over. In fact, there is a song from Busta Rhymes in the late 90s that samples both the Knight Rider theme and the theme from Psycho in the same song.
All right.
Yeah.
Maybe he watched season 3 episode.
Obviously, Busta Rhymes was a big fan of this episode.
I honestly wouldn't put it past him.
Yeah, no,
I wouldn't either.
Yeah,
I wouldn't either. He had a Last Dragon reference in one of his music videos.
Mm-hmm.
So you know the guy's got taste.
Up. Yeah.
If you want to send us feedback, you can do that. We didn't get any emails this week, but you can email thosewerethedaysshow@gmail.com. And we love to get your emails there or on Twitter @thosedaysshow. And you can find the show Monday nights, twitch.tv/twodorkstv. And then as a podcast the following day, anchor.fm/thosewerethedays. Was it Those Were the Days or Those Were the Days Show? I never remember what we did there. Or
Those Were the Day. You know what? I don't remember.
Or just search for.
Find it where you get your podcast.
Yeah, search for Those Were the Days anywhere.
Fire up your podcast thingy and look for Those Were the Days and look for our faces.
Cartoon faces. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, thank you, Audi. I'm using the avatar everywhere at this point. It's super appreciated. I feel like I owe you money, like royalties, everywhere it shows up.
I will take it.
So I have kicked off our spooky month. Audi, you've got next week. What are you bringing us?
Yeah, this time around, I'm doing the animated show.
Hey.
Oh.
So next week, I have chosen Disney's Gargoyles. Season 2, Episode 7, Eye of the Beholder.
Yes.
So we're going to watch some gargoyles, or as some of us like to call it, Next Generation 0.50.
Yeah.
Because, like, most of the cast is from the Star Trek The Next Generation.
Mm-hmm. Next Generation, the animated series.
Yeah.
That's a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Awesome. I can't wait for that. Gargoyles
I'm
is great.
So excited.
And that's on Disney Plus, so easy to find.
Yes. Yep. Should be pretty accessible for most folks. So definitely come back and check that out next week. That's going to be a ton of fun. I cannot wait. Gargoyles is awesome.
Yeah. Man.
So for me, for Amy, for Steven, and for Audie, just remember, Michael is out there. He's working for you.
Man.